brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. On this episode, another lovely conversation with a brilliant member of the Discord community, Kevin. I think his name on there is Gizmotnik. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Everyone's got funny names on Discord, or at least most people do. So we're going to chat to Kevin about loads of stuff, obviously very hobby-related stuff, but he's had a cool career in television sculpting as well, working on the likes of Doctor Who and that. So lots of interesting angles there. And before we dive in, I just wanted to do a wee reminder of the question of the month, bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail to get something sent in there. Tell me about a time that you introduced a 40k or Age of Sigmar player to a non-Games Workshop game. Tell us all about, you know, how you approached it, what the response was like, what game you played, everything like that. I'd love to hear the details of it. So you could send those in again to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. All right then, let's kick on with this conversation with Kevin. I got things started by asking him, as always, about his hobby origin story.
I have a brother who's 4 years older than me. So as with a lot of people, my first, like I was born in 85. Like, so my first interaction with it was HeroQuest. But from the point of view of the younger brother, so I was not allowed to play. I was like at the end of the table and being kicked out regularly, but like trying to sneak back in. Like I'd bring in snacks so that I could sit at the end of the table when my brother and his friends were playing HeroQuest. So I'd be like really wanting to play, but yeah, like never got away with it. And I'd play with the miniatures when, you know, when left to it kind of thing. But he had HeroQuest and Space Crusade. And he had like all the expansions for HeroQuest, but only base Space Crusade. But like, that was like formative, definitely, because I really wanted to be involved in it, but I wasn't. But my own gaming really only started with Necromunda in primary school, because a friend of mine brought in like an old white dwarf that was his brother's as well, who also had Space Crusade. Like, so this is a thing, like we both had older brothers, they both had HeroQuest and Space Crusade, but we just weren't allowed to get involved in the gaming. But Necromunda, I remember specifically because the day before he brought in this white dwarf, he was telling me all about Epic and Titans, and like describing, I don't know if you remember the Imperator Titan back in the day, but it looked like a church, like just a massive church with legs basically, yeah. And like a bunch of guns. But yeah, he was describing this thing to me. And then he went on to describe the game that he thought I'd like, which was Necromunda. And he was saying like, oh, there's all these houses fighting each other, whatever. And there's me picturing, you know, a 10-year-old picturing like literal like people's houses fighting, because he just described to me this church titan thing. And I was like, what the hell is this game? Because, you know, Game of Thrones didn't exist, or probably did, but I didn't know about it. So like, I'd never heard of noble houses before or like anything like that. So I was like, why are the houses fighting? Just being really confused. But yeah, he brought in the magazine and like that was fate sealed pretty much then. Necromunda was the first game that I got and just loved. Like, it's the thing that first turned me onto the podcast was Frostgrave, and it's a lot of this for the same reasons. It's the kit bashing, it's the modeling, it's like that's all what led me into kind of career stuff that we were talking about before later on. But Necromunda was the first, Gorkamorka was the second, and it just snowballed from there basically.
Aye, that's funny about the houses. Like, I'm collecting like a yeah. semi-detached army.
Right. Exactly. And, did you have Terrorist or
because
like he did like describe Goliath and Orlok, I think, were the ones, but like because they were the ones in the base set, and he was describing the Goliath houses as being really, really big, and I was like a mansion, and the Orlok houses as being like wealthier, and I was like, but wouldn't that also be a mansion? Is it like a terrace? And I remember just being so confused, but being like, oh, okay. But then he was relating it back to HeroQuest and Space Crusade, so I was like, well, look, if it's got those things in it, I'm in, because I just always remember those. But yeah, it's funny.
Feels like a good point just to quickly mention Dion Dublin going up the stairs to the bedroom, because we're talking about houses. Interesting to hear the perspective of like little brothers, because I was a big brother, and you know, like my wee brother, he did, he totally wanted in on the act, and he got certain things, and he wanted to play with us, but we were always kind of shoving up at the side. And you know, I used to be quite manipulative at like Christmas and birthdays, because I would say to him, you know, I'm White Dwarf, you might want to ask for this or that. And is it Lamassu, the Chaos Dwarf on the, what's it called again?
Oh, man. I don't know what it's called, but I know the one you're talking about. It's like a bull centaur, like a bull riding thing. Yeah.
So he got that.
And like literally until you said it, I went, oh my God, yeah, I remember that. No, I don't.
Yeah. He got it. And I was like, you know what, Ross, like, you know, I'm obviously a bit more experienced painter than that. I'll paint it for you. And that's, it's just like, I think I got to the stage where I was like, no, I don't think you should be playing with this anymore.
Yeah. So I'll generously offer my services to paint your miniature for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe just keep it in my army for a little bit for safekeeping.
So I mean, what sort of year are we talking then? About 95-ish, if I'm having a stab here?
95 Gorkum Orca? I feel like it was.
I think Gorkum Orca might have been slightly later.
Later? Is 98 or something? I can't remember the exact years. I'm terrible at years anyway. But I think I was about 10 when I got it. So yeah, 95 would have been Necromunda for me then. Mm-hmm. And a little bit later would have been. Whenever Gorkum Orca, I got Gorkum Orca as it was released because I loved orcs. And I loved skirmish games, even though I never played a skirmish. I literally just chopped up plastic miniatures and stuck them together in different ways. Like, that was my gaming experience from when I was young.
How did it evolve then from being that young kid to, you know, did you take it sort of into your early to mid-teens at all?
Yeah, so I've got like I was saying, when I actually looked back in preparation for coming on, in case you were going to ask me questions that I forget all about because I got the memory of a goldfish, I looked back and I went, you know, the thing that got me out of gaming was like somewhat traumatic in that after Gorkum Orca, I got into collecting 40k orcs. And again, mostly for the modeling, I had a massive cult of speed, which was I just kept buying Gorkum Orca stuff and converting it. I got fourth edition 40,000, which is the one with the Black Templars and I think Dark Eldar. It was Dark Eldar, wasn't it? But yeah, I converted like a bunch of stuff. My brother eventually relented and gave me his old Hero Quest stuff. And like I took like all of the knobs in my army were. Do you remember the ogres with the fat bellies and they had like shirts that were busting at the seams or whatever, and all of my knobs were based on those as conversion. Like that was the base body, so they all had like bellies hanging out, which just suited me down to the ground. But and then like tank tracks to make up armor and stuff. But I was doing that and I was collecting for about 3 or 4 years when my neighbor's shed caught fire, and then it caught onto our shed, and basically my entire orc army went up in smoke. Did in a night. And yeah, we got insurance money, so I got money back and I considered getting back into it. But at that time, I was like 15, maybe 15, 16, just starting getting interested in girls and all the rest of it. And I did a lot of collecting and a lot of modeling, but not a lot of gaming. That's just been me throughout with stuff. Like I just really enjoy the hobbying side of it. But yeah, the whole thing went up in smoke and I was just like, I don't think I can start from scratch again with that. And really, it's only in recent years that I got back into it, but it is that sitting out in the shed doing modeling like until late in the night, until like my mum would come to the back door and like shout and be like, it's, you know, nearly midnight, get the hell in the house kind of thing. And I was like sitting there like freezing but like having a great time, and that's the same energy, which I've come to realize in later life's probably a little bit ADHD, but like that's the kind of energy that went into sculpting and stuff later on. So yeah, that's where gaming stopped for me for like quite a while. And then I was saying to you before we started recording, I went into film and TV and stuff in college, studied that for a while, was a cameraman for a bit, and then worked in post-production doing like editing and various other things for a bit. And then my father passed away when I was 23, and that got me back into art because I was just like, I don't want to do this job anymore. I miss doing stuff with my hands, and somehow through the jigs and the reels ended up in film again. But this time, like, because the thing that got me interested in film was actually Lord of the Rings behind the scenes stuff, which I think everyone our generation probably saw a lot of that, like the extended edition behind the scenes stuff. And I loved it. I loved the Weta Workshop stuff. And yeah, I ended up working, I think, for 6 years or so in film and TV doing like, I did Doctor Who was one of the first jobs I worked on. I worked on that a good bit. Like just as I was pulling the ripcord on that to get out, that was when like Star Wars was starting up. Like Disney had bought Star Wars. That was when it like was all going down. And I remember being like, I had made the decision to leave. Like this is skipping a bit of stuff. We can always go back. But I remember making the decision to leave, and then a friend of mine calling me up and being like, "Hey, you want to do some mold making?" On I think it was Rogue One, but it was like one of the Star Wars. And I was like, you know, 10-year-old. This is my first ever love in nerddom was Star Wars. It's kind of gone now, but it was for me. It was like the original trilogy was my first ever love, and like just being like, no, I have to stick with the decision I made. I'm not going back into it because I would still be at it now if I was getting involved in that stuff. But yeah, I kind of lost my train of thought there, I think.
No, I mean, it's really cool to hear about this career that you had, because there's definitely a lot of overlaps. And I dare say, you know, you've got a skill set that you've brought into the hobby. So it'd be cool to hear a bit more about, like, I mean, what sort of things did you do in that job? What sort of skill sets did you build?
So I was primarily a traditional sculptor. After my father passed away and I went back to study, I started by doing figure drawing and stuff. And then I taught myself how to sculpt, originally because I was thinking of trying to go into miniature sculpting, actually. And after a while of doing it and kind of thinking about it and realizing the reason I wanted to do it was because I liked working in film. And I still enjoyed working in film when I was working on set. So I went down the makeup route. But to be honest, I'd say the times in the shed where I was like really pouring my heart and soul into it and like time would just disappear, I kind of think that flow state junkie thing is like, I feel the same way now if I paint miniatures. If I'm painting and the kids aren't painting with me, I'm basically running a constant like tutorial / child minding session, as you know yourself. Like it's a very different, very enjoyable experience, but very different. But that flow state of just losing yourself in it is really what I was after. But yeah, so I like the first job I did on Doctor Who was Matt Smith era. It was a creature called the Teller. But the funny part is, like, with almost all of these, it's like I did the hands of the Teller. If you've ever seen the episode of the Teller, he's in a straitjacket for the first 3/4 of the episode, and then for the last 2 minutes there's a shot of him running away in the background. And there's like the weird like hands that he has that I did. And there's like a whole bunch of stuff on that series. Like I did The Mummy on the Orient Express. I did the Scobox Blitzer. I did the Meyer Warrior's Head, which was another thing from a later series. But yeah, like I had a great time while I was working on it. Met some really, really nice people. But I didn't come back into gaming until I left that as almost compensation. Like I had left and it was back in via role-playing games rather than... Because I never did role-playing games when I was growing up. I only did miniatures gaming. But it was back in via role-playing games that I came back into the hobby. And weirdly, I'm one of those people who came in because of Critical Role. Like I watched the first series of Critical Role, the actual play one, and really enjoyed it. And I was talking to my wife about it, and my wife being the person she is, she went and bought me a player's handbook and was like, you know, there's a role-playing club in St. Albans, where I was living at the time. And I was like, oh, really? And the guy who I played my first ever game with actually has a YouTube channel. And he was like, are you okay if we put this? It's like the first time I ever played a role-playing game. It was an actual play as well. So it was... It's a very kind of strange set of coincidences, but yeah, in terms of the skill sets, I think the kind of attention to detail and the artistry definitely, like of sculpting and of working on film, was definitely very much informed by like doing conversions and just that being willing to just spend the time to get it right. Like no matter how long it took, like you just sit there. And like I said, I remember coming in a couple of times and being kind of a bit shivery after I got in because I hadn't realized that I had just completely lost track of time kind of thing. That still happens now sometimes, but less so because adult and responsibilities.
How did you get that sculpting job then? Like, training or qualifications?
I did about a year of, the very first thing I did when I decided to go back into art was because I thought I was going to go into concept art, as a lot of people do, I feel like. I started by trying to learn how to draw again, like from the ground up. And I went to Florence and did figure drawing for about 3 months, spent all the money on that, came home, and then I just went and lived in Dublin and rented a tiny little apartment, or not apartment, a little studio, and decided to learn how to sculpt. I can't remember how I came to that as a decision, but I did portraiture for a while. And then I applied for like a 7-week course in a place called Neil Gorton Prosthetics, who are the guys, like the guy who started Millennium Effects that does all the stuff for Doctor Who. It's his course, basically. It's a 7-week course to teach you all about doing prosthetics, makeup, creature design, and all that kind of stuff. So I went and I did that. And at the end of that, they were very positive while I was on it about the work I was doing while I was there. And like about 2 weeks after I finished, I did one more portfolio piece at home. And then I sent it to them and they were like, yeah, you want to come over and work? Now I just moved back to Ireland, or just gone back to Ireland after the course. And like literally 2 weeks later, I got my first job doing it. So, yeah, I don't know, like, I got along well with them while I was there, had a bit of fun, and could do the job well enough that I wasn't going to make a total hash of it, I think was the idea. But, yeah, they kind of hired me straight away after that, which was nice.
Is there, like, a typical palette of, if that's the right word, like, materials you typically use when you're sculpting, or is it so varied?
It kind of depends on the scale of the sculpt. So for like really big creatures or creature suits and stuff, where you're like, you've life cast an actor and they're like a big fiberglass outline of exactly what they're like. If you're doing a really big suit, you'll probably use water-based clay because it's just so much quicker. Like, you can slap it on and work with it really quickly. But for anything smaller, like for prosthetic stuff or like small hand detail, like glove things or whatever, it's oil-based clay. Then of course you're making molds and casts of it, and then after that you're going to production. So you'll like get like a creature suit or whatever it is out, like, or hand pieces out, and you'll paint them very intricately and stuff. And like, that's a lot of where I learned about painting, because I did do painting technically as a child, but the thing I liked was the modeling, like, was conversions themselves. And once I had the thing primed, I'd be like, yeah, it's probably fine. Like, it's gray or it's whatever color, like red. And I put the green skin on for, like, and I do a little bit of washing. But like, it's really funny. Like, when I came back with my son much later and I was like, oh man, painting is not nearly as hard as I made it out to be when I was younger, but it was more of a lack of interest kind of thing. But yeah, I learned a lot about painting while I was both doing that course and then just working in TV stuff. Like, there's a lot you can achieve with kind of simple techniques. But yeah, so to go back to the question, it's the actual materials that I mostly worked with were clay, but then after that it's everything. Like, it's, you could do a little bit of prop building to go with some of that, or it could be a foam latex piece, it could be a silicon piece, it could be whatever, and each of them is painted in a very different way. Like, when you're painting silicon prosthetics, you're mixing pigments or oil paints with like bathroom caulk. You know, like transparent, like caulk gun. You gotta be careful how you say that, especially if you're from New Zealand. Apparently,
you've already talked about your knobs, so
yeah, exactly. My knobs with their big bellies. But yeah, so there's like different materials are painted in completely different ways. But it was an amazing time. Like, you might get a kick out of this, because being a Labyrinth fan, and you're saying your daughter's a Labyrinth fan and stuff, one of the I think it was the third Doctor Who job I worked on. Actually, no, it was while I was working on the very first job technically I worked on for Millennium wasn't Doctor Who. It was the Harry Hill movie. Harry Hill? Is that the guy? The guy with them. Yeah. And he did a movie. But I sculpted a like a prosthetic for that. That was the first thing I ever did for them. But while I was on that, I met a guy called Gary Pollard, and his first job ever in his first job ever in movies is very different than mine. Mine was the Harry Hill movie. His was Labyrinth. And he sculpted Jim the Worm. He sculpted the Nipper Sticks. And what was the, there was a third thing on it. I can't remember off the top of my head what it was, but the Nipper Sticks were the one I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like, and you meet these people, you're just like, that's incredible. And yeah, really, like, they're all really nice people as well. Like, the one thing I kicked myself about in relation to looking back on it is I only got into role-playing games after I worked on that, and everybody in that industry is like mega nerdy and, like, you know, friendly and arty and whatever. I would love to have been into role playing games then, and to have like run or played in a couple of games with them, because I'd say it would have been so much fun. Like, they're all mad as a bag of hammers, but like in the best possible way. Yeah.
Do you feel a lot of pressure going to Halloween parties to deliver on your costume?
Nope.
No, just no, that Amazon turtle.
I don't put an effort. I've thought about it before, and like, I keep trying to, I think when Tom, this is my little fellow, when he's a little bit older, I might do some Halloween-y stuff with him where like I'll put in some actual effort. Like, I talked about it before. So like, at some point I'm going to make him like, do you know the Boglins?
Yeah.
You know, the little puppet guys. Like, I could make one of them out of latex pretty easily, because you just do a plaster slip mold and like take out the clay and just pour latex into it, and you let it develop the skin and you pour it back out, and you'll have something that's puppetable pretty easily. So like, I could sculpt something really quite cool for him, and it wouldn't have to be a Boglin, it could be anything, but like that kind of hand puppet thing. And I was like, oh, I could do like a baby raptor coming out of an egg and like all this stuff. I'm like, I will do it at some point, but it'll be like when he's old enough that he can do it with me and have fun with it. But yeah, I think sometimes he doesn't, like, I've talked about it, like, oh yeah, but that's what daddy used to do or whatever, but like, I don't think it quite registers with him that I can do that stuff. Like, he loves doing the miniature painting, absolutely loves it. And he was a large part of me getting back into anything to do with miniatures. Just his, like, he found miniatures on my shelf because I ran D&D for my nephew back when he was 12, and he's now 18. And he found these D&D, you know, the box set ones. There's like 42 miniatures in each of them or something. I had two of them, and he found them and he was playing with them. And I was like, you know, we can paint those. And he got into that. And then I started playing. Actually, it was the first time I found the podcast was listening to about Frostgrave. Because I love Frostgrave. But the thing I found with him, because he's quite good, like tactically, and he's got creative in thinking stuff up. He's like the perfect person to add a bit of chaos to what is essentially solo gaming, because he can only just read. But things like Frostgrave, where like if I keep track of all this stuff, he'll make all the decisions, and it's always creative and interesting, and like it's just so much more fun because he's so excited when things happen. Like that, it's like a combination of having a cheerleader and like the best dice randomizer ever. He's like, oh yeah, this happens, and I'm just like sitting back and watching him. But like I'm actually running all of the game mechanics, and he's just having a great time, which is it's lovely. Like it's a large part of the reason that like I'm sticking around in the community. I mean, apart from it just being so friendly. Because the only miniature gaming I do is with him, but there's that hobby parenting section on the Discord, and I love it. Like, because I just love seeing people like our age, and like a lot of people have stories of like going away from the hobby and coming back, which is exactly where I find myself. But it's the parenting side of it is just so different than I don't know, because that's just where I find myself. But it's inspirational when you're doing it. I find like it's great sitting down with him and doing some stuff, and he's really really into it. He's very similar personality to me, which might be a curse or a blessing, I really don't know, but it's very enjoyable, that side of it.
Did you say what age the kids were?
6 and 3, 3 nearly 4. She's nearly 4, but yeah, the daughter will begrudgingly take part if she feels like she's not getting enough attention, but for the most part I play with Tom when she's either away or there's someone else over to play with her, or if she'll watch a movie or something like that if he really wants to play something. It's actually, I say we do about half and half role-playing games versus miniature games, because miniature games just require a little bit more setup. But I say half and half in the gaming between role-playing games and miniatures. But in terms of actual time that we spend doing hobby-related stuff, I'd say about half the time is painting, because he just loved, like, he asked Santa for terrain because he saw it in the Frostgrave book. So we got like a battle systems cardboard castle set, and he asked for some miniatures. So I got him the third of those D&D sets, and he has painted every single one of his and about half of mine since Christmas. Like he just loves it. And he's got speed paints I got him just because we can dry brush the stuff to get it, you know, paint the thing. I don't even bother painting it black first. I just paint it gray and then go from there with dry brushing. And he just, both him and my daughter, who's has no interest in the stuff, but she'll paint the miniatures. And she paints them really carefully, but the colors are mental. Like the young fella will paint them like as close to what he thinks they should be. And sometimes he'll even like there's Grell in the one that he got. So like D&D monsters that are basically floating brains with beaks and tentacles. And he was like, can I get the monster manual so we can see what they're supposed to look like? And he took it and he did. But like everything that the daughter does is like luminous pink and purple with like blue spots. And she'd be like, and I think it should have green hair. And you're like, yeah, okay. And she works it, and like, you can see them from across the table. It's like some sort of weird synthwave cyberpunk like monstrosity that she's doing. And Tom's are just really like, very kind of precise the way he thinks they're supposed to be or whatever, but they both enjoy it, so that's good.
Is the wee boys, he played anything other than Frostgrave with you?
Yeah, so I think I said it to you on the Discord, but I think the best single gaming experience we had was the Labyrinth role-playing game. There's a book by River Horse, and it's a gorgeous book. It's got like a little hole cut in it for the two dice to sit in. And it's like, it's split up into chapters, and then each chapter has 20 something scenes in it. So like, I think it's 99 in the whole book. And like each scene is like, it's randomized. So here's the people in it, and it could be one of these six people, and they're doing one of six things or whatever the whole way through. So like you can play it directly from the book as you go, just reading ahead a little bit. It was just, he got so invested in this story. Like he had seen Labyrinth, and he did the exact same thing. Like, oh, the Goblin King stole my baby brother. So it was the same like idea, but he had his own character name or whatever. But like, he still talks about it, and he'll talk about, do you remember the time that I met the giant turtle and the turtle helped me knock down the wall with the goblins on it? You know, this kind of stuff. As though he was there and like got to the end, and there's a little bit at the back of the book with all the character signatures in it, where it's like Sarah and Ludo and all this are their own signatures, and he signed his character's name across it in big letters, and he told his mom like, oh, I beat the Goblin King, you know, and she came back. It was amazing. I think because it was so easy to run, but it's so kind of focused, because from the get-go you have your overall goal, but it's like a campaign and you don't have to do any mental, there's no mental load, which actually I found running games for him, the hardest part is his brain goes in all the directions at once. So like, yeah, like he want to be like fantasy stuff one minute and then superheroes the next kind of thing, which can be fun depending on what your system you're running. But with that, he was just super like laser focused, and he kept asking about it. He was like, "Can we play a little bit more Labyrinth today?" And I'll be like, "Oh, we'll play one scene," and we play a scene which take maybe 15-20 minutes at most, and then if we'd have time, like, "Oh, sure, we'll do one more," and you roll to see what scene you end up in and then what happens. And like, I think a large part of the reason why I like role playing games anyway is because I don't know what's going to happen. Because as someone who's studied like film and TV and stuff, most of the time you're watching a movie because you know your three act structure and you've seen so many movies, or whatever. You've got a rough idea what's going to happen. But with role playing games, you never really know, unless you're running like a module. But like, you never really know what's going to happen, depending, and you never know what players are going to do. And that is tripled for playing with children. Like, they just come up with the most random stuff, and it's so much fun. But yeah, it's been great. Like, getting back into the hobby via him has been the best possible way to get back into it, I think.
Yeah, that Labyrinth game, I remember having a look at it when you mentioned it. It looks brilliant. So I didn't buy it just yet because I'm getting a bit of stick from my wife, because she's like, you're taking this too far now. Like, you're feeding off her, she's feeding off you, and you're both going to just end up literally in the Labyrinth.
Dancing the magic dance forever.
Yeah, pretty much in my life.
Over and over.
To be honest. Yeah. What age do you think I'd get away with playing that with her? Like, she's 2.5 now.
I would have gotten away with it with Tom at 4, I'd say. But 5, like, he was playing it at 5, nearly 6, and having a great time with it. So I don't know, man. It kind of depends on how she feels about it. The thing is, right, so long as you know your numbers 1 to 6, and like the dice, I can't remember the dice as they are there, have numbers or pips, but like everything is based on a difficulty that is literally just a 1 to 6 difficulty. And then you explain to them, like, oh, you've got all these things in your character sheet. They won't remember them, but you can remind... Well, actually, to be fair, they remember them a lot better than you expect them to. But if you give them, say, oh, well, this is a difficulty 5 thing, it works a little bit like a Cypher system role-playing game thing, where if your character is good at it, it automatically goes down a step. If you have something that you can use to help you with it, it goes down a step, you know, like that kind of way. So it's kind of quite easy to understand. You're like, oh, well, this is really difficult, or this guy is only a goblin, he's difficulty 3. There's no explicit... or there's explicitly no violence in it, I guess, or there's like action scenes, but it's not like stabby stabby. So it's like, it's all in how you run it, I think. I feel like you could run it for a 2.5-year-old, but it just depend on... But I think the fact that it's in scenes might help a lot, but I'd say you'd have to just try and see, you know what I mean? But definitely it's got a framework that's so modular. Like, you can do as much or as little as you want. And then because it's like, roll your dice and you can roll... I can't remember now why there's 2 dice. Is it like you roll the 2? Oh, if you're good at it, you can roll 2 and take the higher, I think is what it is, as far as I remember. But there's no addition in it. It's literally just, you have to hit this on the dice and you do or you don't, kind of thing. But yeah, it's very fun. And I haven't done, but I could play it with him again. It would be a totally different game, because the only bits that are the same as you're going through is the first scene in each chapter. When you move into a new chapter, you always do the first scene, and they're almost all scenes from the movies. Like, there's the old man with the goose hat thing in the hedge maze, you know, like, and there's a couple of other bits that are like Humongous, the gate robot guy is in it as well, you know, like all that stuff is in there, so that you've always got a smattering of it. And then some of the other scenes that are in the movie are scattered through it, and then a lot of it is just original content based on the movie. But yeah, it's super fun. I don't really know what age you'd need to be, but it's worth a try.
Well, I'm 40, so I'll probably manage it now, even though I don't know what rules.
Can you count 1 to 6, Matthew? Is that a difficulty?
I don't know about that. How much painting do you get, like, just for you these days?
I do a lot less than I probably should. I bought 3 little busts because I was like, I really want to spend some time and like really paint something, and I haven't primed them yet. So my wife is going away next week because she's going to a conference, and I might use that opportunity to get it. But for some reason, in the back of my head, I've got a thing of, I kind of want to start doing some like 2D illustration work, and I'm going to use paints for that too. So part of me is there, like, I got these lovely Hera model busts that I bought, which is like 3 of them, and not that I tell my wife this, but they're like 30 quid each. It's like, so I spent the bones of 100 quid on these things, and I'm like, I might just use them as lighting reference. Like, I get a little light and I'll light them from one side with like a blue light and the other side with like an orange light, take some photos and be like, cool. And I'll try and paint that and see, can I do that? I've never really, I've done illustration on a computer, but I've never really done it in paint, and I want to do that. And you're like, just stick with one thing for a while. But I don't know if I didn't actually tell you this either before or during, but I did some miniature sculpting digitally after I got out of film work, because I was trying to figure out something I could work from home when we moved back, because we now live in the west of Ireland. So the whole time I was doing the film work, it was almost exclusively in England. There was a little stint in Ireland for Penny Dreadful, which was fun. I got to life cast a Bond girl. She was very nice. It was Eva Green. She was a very nice lady. Anyway, a whole bunch of other stuff. But after I decided to get out, I decided to train as a digital sculptor. So I did that myself, learned how to use ZBrush, and I did a couple of jobs. Like I did one job for Modiphius as a freelancer, and I did one job for Colin in Battle Systems when he was doing Core Space. I did like two or three sculpts for that. And like, just, I love the people, but I just couldn't, I never got that same flow state thing that I was talking about before that I was addicted to from working on the computer. I like computers. I've been a gamer, computer gamer all my life, and like general computer nerd. Like I built my first PC and stuff. So like, I'm not incapable of using computers, but I just, it's not the same as like getting paint on my fingers or getting clay in my hair, because it was on my hands and then I rubbed it through my hair. Like just everything, like even down to the first time I glued a plastic model after we got back into the game, after I got back into the game, I'm just smelling poly cement. I was like, whoa, like nostalgia straight away, which, you know, solvent abuse, nostalgia, it's all in a ballpark, right? But yeah. Yeah, but it's just different. It just hits different when it's physical for me, for some reason. And there's just that little toddler part of my brain that's like, I don't want to do work on a computer. That's like, no, I don't want to. And I'll just distract myself while I'm trying to do it. But like, I did do those jobs. I did finish them. And then I was like, yeah, I don't think I can do digital sculpting. And it's not like any sort of looking down on it. Like, I think the people that do it are amazing and do amazing stuff. And I really like 3D printed stuff. I just, like, there's just that part of me is like, I want to be a dirty, smelly art person who does dirty, smelly art. I want to actually get my fingers dirty. So I don't know. I don't know where that comes from, to be honest.
Did you know that, just like every other podcast out there, this show has its very own Patreon? But this is no ordinary Patreon. It's actually the worst Patreon ever. That's right, there's no rewards, no extras, no bonus content, no early access, no shoutouts, and no thank yous. I'll just take the money and quietly get on with making the show. Not that there's any money to take, because hardly anyone's pledging to the thing. Like I say, it's the worst Patreon ever. Find it at bedroombattlefields.com/worstpatreonever. That's all one word, worst Patreon ever. Now, back to the show. Do you have like a tool bag left over from your sculpting career and stuff that you could then use to maybe build like terrain pieces and that?
Yeah. I mean, I have a it's a thing they call a Stellazzi case. So it's like a trundle case on like a carry-on bag, like on wheels thing, but it's got drawers in the front, and one side of it is all paint stuff and drawing stuff, and one side of it is all sculpting tools. And the first thing I did when I decided I was going to paint with my son before Santa came and brought him the speed paints was go up to the attic to get all the acrylics out of the top, because there's like a bunch of tube acrylics, and I just wore them down with some matte medium or whatever. But yeah, so I've got a bunch of stuff and I have, this is the really posh part, because as someone who isn't that into miniature painting but has painting experience, I have an airbrush. I have a nice airbrush, because I used to airbrush stuff for film stuff. So I've got like an Iwata airbrush and a little compressor. So the airbrush is just a brilliant cheat. Like it's something obviously I learned to use in film stuff, but it's because there's a lot of stuff you use it for. Like obviously getting a paint job done very, very, very quickly, relatively speaking, and doing, yeah, it's a lot of stuff like subsurface veins and stuff that you do when you're painting like a big creature thing. But for miniatures, because of just the scale difference, you can just do stuff so incredibly fast, and things that are really like, it's achievable with the brush, but it just takes a lot more time and like a lot more expertise. But it's great for the kids, because like I can put like a base color palette down that whatever they put on top of it, it'll look pretty good. You know, like it's there's not much there, but when I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, that looks really nice. You know? Like, but I haven't sat down and just done a, which I keep, like I was saying earlier, I keep threatening to do like a start to finish, how good could I do if I actually really, really tried? And the reason I got the 3 busks, I was like, I'll probably mess up the first one. The second one will be kind of shit. And then I'll get to the third one and be like, maybe I can repaint that first one again, because I probably won't paint the third one. But yeah, that was the idea behind it, but I haven't done it yet. So I painted stuff with the kids, but usually it's I'm very quickly doing stuff, or my son will be painting something and he won't like something that's happened, like something has gotten too dark because he's speed painted a couple of times, and I'll say, oh, do you want me to do a little bit of opaque paint on that? Like he has a red dragon that was in one of the sets and the chest got really dark because he was like, I want to make a little bit more dirty looking. I want to make a bit, and then it got too dark and I was like, I can go back onto that with some opaque paint if you want. He's like, yeah. And then like, that's teamwork painting or whatever. But he's really proud of them. Like when his granny comes over and she lives just down the road from us, he'll be like, look what I painted today. And he'll bring them over and show her. And, you know, she heaps praise on him. Then he just thinks he's the king of everything, which is lovely. It's really nice.
They work on many terrain pieces together.
We haven't done it yet because I salvaged, and I posted about it on the Discord, I salvaged a whole bunch of styrene from my mother-in-law got a dishwasher or a washing machine or something delivered, and I have a whole bunch of it, and I've put in an order with the hobby shop that I use for basically everything I can get. I get through this place called Era Hobbies because it's in Ireland, and it means I don't have to pay shipping. And for some reason, every damn time I do it, I'm like, oh, the next time I'm putting in an order, I have to get a hot wire cutter because they don't have one. I remember I used to have one when I was younger, but I don't have one now, and like I just don't want to get into cutting styrene with a knife with them for various reasons, stabbing not least one of them, but also it's just so squeaky and horrible. And I keep saying I'm going to get a hot wire cutter so we can work on the styrene together, make some really nice stuff, but just haven't done it. So apart from like the battle systems terrain that he got and like cutting out some cardboard stuff and sticking things together, not really, but it's like it's on the cards. I really want to do some like nice Frostgrave terrain for him because I think he'd really enjoy doing it. Like I know he would, because anything crafty he just really loves. And then he would want to play even more, which he already wants to play a lot, but he'd want to play even more if it's terrain he built. But he sets up, like, we got, when Santa brought the battle system terrain, he also brought like a big long table that's like you can kneel down at it, which is actually technically a bunch of IKEA Kallax units with a tabletop screwed onto it basically, but you can kneel down beside and play at it. And he'll set up like little miniature war games himself and try and co-opt his sister into playing when I'm not playing with him, but he loves having the terrain stuff. So like I have to do it, it's still on the back burner.
I had a funny one the other night. So my wife, she's looking at that it's like skirting board heating that you could get, you know, instead of radiators. So she'd arrange, like, she'd been speaking to the company to do it, and they send you out these wee like sort of panel, like they're just sections of the skirting board. And she had a plumber round, and he was they're both having this really adult conversation about like pricing and the logistics of doing the task and everything. And I'm just standing there silently looking at the two little samples, thinking, you know, I could really do something with that. Like, yeah. Maybe like, you know, a bit of like a hive, and there's a couple of chimneys, and I'm starting to think about all this. And it's just like, what do you think, Matthew? Is that about the pricing and that? And I'm like, yeah. What do you think? Because that's always what I do if I've not been listening. I'm like, well, what do you think? And she says, well, I think. And I'm like, yep, I totally agree.
I couldn't agree more. as someone who previously discussed started with Necromunda, terrain made out of Greeblies is one of my favorite things. And you know, also Star Wars fan from back in the day. Like a lot of model make, it's really funny. Like you see people working, like professional model makers, and they're just, you know, like bits boxes for miniatures. They have that on crack, but with like pulled apart Walkman, like old school circuitry, and like they'd be like, oh, I've got the perfect thing for this. And they'd like pull out like snip off a transistor off of something and like glue it on. And they'd take it to a really high level where it's really nice. But like most of those guys have at least some, if not Airfix type modeling, quite a lot of them have like hobby gaming in their past. And it shows, man, like it shows. They're like doing this just gorgeous stuff with, you know, stuff that they pull out of a wall and like pull bits off of. But like that's the good stuff. That's just like, I think that's a lot of the addiction as well with conversions. It's the possibility space where you're like, I've got Like I love the Frostgrave stuff, like the Northstar miniatures. I haven't bought any yet, but I just love them. Like even looking at them, I'm like, if I go down that rabbit hole, like you're never going to pull me out of it. Of just like, I'm going to pose this guy like this. I'm going to cut a little bit off of his shoulder and like, I'm going to stick it on this way so that it kind of kinks out a little bit more. And like, that'll be me for just days. I'll just keep doing that. But yeah, it's great.
Do you still find that flow state now and then when you're able to work on wee conversions? Or
yeah, like because I'm not doing like art work at the moment, the two things I find it happens with is running games for people. Like I run a local game, and actually I run a game once a week with the guy who first introduced me to, like, we've been friends since we were four, but he now lives in Australia. So like once a week in the afternoon I run a game for him, so that's really fun. But running games, I find that happens to me, where like I put away the notes and I kind of just am doing it like a little bit. And then the other for me at the moment is actually just running. So it's not a creative one, but like I got, for some reason, and like as with everything, I dive into rabbit holes and stuff. I started doing ultra running. So like I run like 100 plus kilometers a week. And like I've run a couple of ultras of like 50 mile length. So that's like, I'm pretty sure that counts as some form of brain damage to decide to do that in the first place. But I find fun in it. And that's when I do most of the podcast listening, because like, about half the time I'm running, I listen to a podcast, which if you're running for 12 or 15 hours in the week total, get through a lot of content. You get through a lot of stuff, but that's about it at the moment. That's kind of partly why I'm trying to get either back more into the hobby modeling or possibly illustration stuff. I really can't decide which of the route to go down, but whichever one I try first is probably the one I'm going to stick with for 2 or 3 years either way, but that tends to be the way it goes.
What's next up for you in terms of anything you're looking to paint quite soon, or anything you're looking to play quite soon?
If I'm gonna do miniature painting, it's definitely gonna be those Hera busts. They're the academic busts, and they're gorgeous. Like, I find if there's especially on the bust stuff, if there's too much detail on a model, I stop before I even start. I'm like, oh, it's just, there's too many greebies. Like, I want it to be something simple so that I can put a lot of stuff onto it. But Hera do these really nice busts that they're actually from they call them the artistic busts or academic busts is what it is. But the artistic ones have some of the same models, but just lots more greeblies on them, like helmets and like necklaces and stuff. But they just take all that stuff off and just have the shoulders and head. And they're lovely. They're lovely little things, like really nice print quality and stuff. So I want to paint those, and I really want to get the hot wire cutter. But I have to remember, because it's like one of those things that like you have to order 50 quid or more to get the free shipping, and the hot wire cutter is like 18 quid. I'm like, I can't just order that. It'll cost me an extra fiver. So it's an excuse to buy more stuff.
Got to spend 50.
It's happened too many times. It's happened like 3 times where I'm like, it's a hot wire cutter. The styrene has been upstairs since like before Christmas. So yeah, got to get around to that.
And what about gaming then? Anything in the pipeline on that front?
Like I said, twice a week is the role playing game stuff, for like two different groups. Tom is the son is currently doing like role playing game stuff with me as well. But yeah, our game of choice at the moment, we've moved off Frostgrave a little bit. Our game of choice at the moment is Song of Blades and Heroes, which actually you're to thank for that one as well, because it was on yours that I came across that, which is just brilliant from a kid standpoint, because he does all the tactics himself. He can keep track of everything himself. The only thing I needed to help him with was I built the armies, because the points cost formulas are way too complicated for a 6-year-old. But everything else he can do. Like, he knows when something is going to get knocked back versus knocked over. It's not like it's complicated, but like he can keep track of everything. But like the last game I played of that with him, there was actual tears, because at one point just a bunch of rolls went badly for him, and his hero ended up like on the ground surrounded by like two trolls or whatever. And it was just like, oh, it was all going horribly wrong. And then the leader of the opposition, who's like an orc boss guy, was like, just kept deciding to try and do a really big thing at the start of his turn and kept turning over the thing. Like, oh, roll 3, because he's going to do so much to your hero who's on the ground. And like, oh, damn, it turned over again. Happened about 3 times. And then, you know, probability took over again. It started going okay. So he got away with whatever it was, like the location of power thing he ended up winning. But it was like the amount of investment where he's like, oh, like it's just going horribly wrong. Like, there was actual tears, which I haven't experienced before for gaming, but he had a great time with it in the end. Like, he was really ecstatic at the end of it, so it was a real roller coaster, that one. But yeah, Song of Lights and Heroes is great.
Aye, it's a brilliant game. I always come back to it. You know, I've had points where I'm like, it's not complex enough for me. I'm going to like get into other stuff now and just leave it be. And I always come back to it because, like, I keep banging on about this in the podcast now. I'm happy enough now to roll back roles and bring forward more story and narrative. And it's just such a great fit for that, I think, because there's just so little bookkeeping and it's so just blends into the background, the rules, doesn't it? So
yeah, like it goes away completely, which is great. Like, but the other one that I have on the shelf that I really want to try is Rangers of Shadowdeep, because I only just got it about a month ago, and because we've been playing other stuff, I just haven't, like, I try not to switch stuff around too much with Tom because he's six and he gets really invested in stuff. So but I feel like running through, like, the Rangers scenarios, because I've heard a bunch of them on either podcasts or actual plays or whatever. So, like, I've heard the first three scenarios a bunch of times from different people's point of views. So I have a rough idea of how that goes. I don't know, like, what do you reckon? You've got experience at Rangers. What do you reckon for a six-year-old would it be? He gets along with Frostgrave so long as I'm running a lot of the stuff, but I figure just that extra narrative bit to it might be good.
My main issue here is I'm missing the data on what a six-year-old does, or I don't know any at the moment. So yeah. I would be a fraud if I said yes or no. But as a narrative game, it's superb. And I don't necessarily think it's complicated either. Like, if you're already doing Frostgrave, like, as you know, there's so many overlaps with the mechanics. So yeah, I love Rangers, really do.
Yeah, like I had a flick through the rules, all right, and it's very close to Frostgrave, obviously, but I think in general one of the things I found with him is that any game system, whether it's a role playing game or otherwise, that's set up for solo play is really good for playing with him, because I can basically just play the solo and let him make all the character decisions. Like, I can play it as a solo role playing game or a solo miniatures game. Which I was never something I'd actually done much of myself. But once I found those kind of games, so like things like there's a role-playing game called Ironsworn, which is great for solo role-playing. And they have a Star Wars-y kind of one, which is Starforged, Ironsworn Starforged. And those are both brilliant for playing with him, because so long as I understand how the rules work and kind of do the stuff, he'll make all the decisions and he'll have a great time. So he's basically just writing a story, but he knows... Like, I'll always try and tell him before a dice roll what he needs to hit on the dice, so he knows, and then that just adds to the tension or that kind of way. And yeah, it's like, I know I've said it like a bunch of times already, but like, hobbying with kids is something I can't recommend enough if they're into it. Like, my daughter really isn't into it. Like, it's not like a boy's, like, oh, I'm doing this with my son because this is a boy thing. Like, it's literally, she couldn't care less. She will do the painting stuff because painting is fun, and she likes, you know, she'll get about halfway through and sometimes she will actually start painting her nails, which sounds very stereotypical, but it's just her, man. She's all about princess dresses. She's all, and like, Tom is just from day dot has been into anything nerdy. At the moment, I'm reading him a book about dragons. Which, do you know the role-playing game Vassen? Free League make it?
No.
It's worth looking at. Not so much for playing with kids or anything, but just, it's just gorgeous. It was originally a book, Vassen, which is like a Nordic word for like a specific type of fairy. So like the fae folk or whatever. And they've got a bunch of really cool lore. So he made this art book, this illustrator. So he wrote it and illustrated it, and it's gorgeous. And it was so gorgeous, basically, that Free League came up to him and went, hey, we really like your art. Do you want to make a game out of it? And they did. And he did all the art for the game. And it's beautiful. But I found his art through that game, thought it was really nice, and I was looking at his website. And he has, like, a bunch. So he has, like, Undead, and he has Vassen, the original one, and he has the Dragons book. And then for Christmas, my wife got me that Dragons book. And it's just beautiful. Like, it's worth looking at. The artist's name is Johan Egerkrans, which is hard to spell, but if you look up Vassen RPG, you'll find it. But his art style is just gorgeous. It's like a little bit cartoony but really grungy, and I don't quite know how to describe it, but it's like right in my wheelhouse of like as someone who really likes 40k orcs, like it's chunky and kind of like a little bit almost World of Warcrafty, but grungy, like not like bright colors and whatever. It's just really, it's really where I live, like visuals wise. So yeah, it's really cool.
Big thanks to Kevin there. What a lovely guy. Really enjoyed that conversation. And I've got lots more recorded in the bank as well, so I'll be pushing these out in the coming weeks. And a final shout out to for the question of the month, remember to head on over to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail to get yours submitted. Alright, that's it for this episode, and we'll talk again on the next one.